From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Do you believe this morning that Bernie Sanders is qualified and ready to be president of the United States?
That was the question posed to Democratic presidential hopeful Hillary Clinton by MSNBC's Joe Scarborough Wednesday. He was referring to an interview in the New York Daily News earlier in the week with Bernie Sanders. He asked the same question several times.
Well, I think the interview raised a lot of really serious questions. And I look at it this way. The core of his campaign has been break up the banks. And it didn't seem in reading his answers that he understood exactly how that would work under Dodd-Frank, exactly who would be responsible, what the criteria were. That means you can't really help people if you don't know how to do what you are campaigning on saying you want to do.
So is he qualified? I know there are a lot of examples of where he came up short and the interviewers were having to repeat questions. So the question, and I'm serious, if you weren't running today and you looked at Bernie Sanders, would you say this guy is ready to be president of the United States?
Well, I think he hadn't done his homework, and he'd been talking for more than a year about doing things that he obviously hadn't really studied or understood. And that does raise a lot of questions. And really what it goes to is for voters to ask themselves, can he deliver what he's talking about? Can he really help people?
What do you
think?
Can
he help our economy? Can he keep our country strong? Well, obviously, I think I'm by far the better choice.
But do you think he is qualified, and do you think he is able to deliver on the things he is promising to all of these Democratic voters?
Well, let me put it this way, Joe. I think that what he has been saying about the core issue in his whole campaign doesn't seem to be rooted in an understanding of either the law or the practical ways you get something done. And I will leave it to voters to decide who of us can do the job that the country needs, who can do all aspects of the job, both on the economic domestic issues and on national security and foreign policy.
Her replies led to her Democratic primary opponent Bernie Sanders making the following statements at a massive rally in Philadelphia later on Wednesday.
She has been saying lately that she thinks that I am, quote unquote, not qualified to be president. Well, let me just say in response to Secretary Clinton, I don't believe that she is qualified if she is... If she is, through her super PAC, taking tens of millions of dollars in special interest funds, I don't think that you are qualified if you get $15 million from Wall Street through your super PAC. I don't think you are qualified if you have voted for the disastrous war in Iraq. I don't think you are qualified if you have supported virtually every disastrous trade agreement which has cost us millions of decent paying jobs. I don't think you are qualified if you supported the Panama Free Trade Agreement, something I very strongly oppose and which, as all of you know, has allowed corporations and wealthy people all over the world to avoid paying their taxes to their countries.
Also on Wednesday, former President Bill Clinton was in Philadelphia at a gathering where two activists queried him on his crime legislation that brought about a sharp increase in mass incarceration and about the former Secretary of State's comments, which many called racial scapegoating, made at the time the legislation was being considered.
I talked to a lot of African-American groups. They thought Black Lives Mattered. They said, take this bill because our kids are being shot in the street by gangs. We have 13-year-old kids planning their own funerals. She don't want to hear any of that. You know what else she don't want to hear? Because of that bill, we had a 25-year low in crime, a 33 low in the murder rate, year low rate, murder rate. And listen to this. Because of that and the background check law, we had a 46-year low in the deaths of people by gun violence. And who you think those lives were? That matter. Whose lives were saved? That matter. Oh. Now, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Now you're screaming. So let's do another one. Whoa, 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 whoa. No, wait, wait. I want to deal with them all. Come on. No. Come on. Wait, 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 wait. Wait. See these other signs? This is what's the matter. I don't know how you would characterize the gang leaders who got 13-year-old kids hopped up on crack and sent them out onto the street to murder other African-American children. Maybe you thought they were good citizens. She didn't. She didn't. You are defending the people who kill the lives you say matter. Tell the truth.
Well, to unpack all of that, we spoke with Professor Anthony Montero via telephone from Philadelphia Friday.
Well, I think it's crunch time. New York and Pennsylvania, which will be a week later, and I think New Jersey is in that group and Maryland is in that group with Pennsylvania. I think it's crunch time, and what happens in New York could decide, in fact, who has the real momentum and whether or not Bernie's momentum can be stopped. And if he wins New York, I mean, his momentum comes all the way to July at the convention here in Philadelphia. But I think with Paul Krugman, as you point out, what he said, I think it was this morning in the New York Times, about Bernie Sanders, he said 8 years ago about Barack Obama, which in a sense shows Paul Krugman to be nothing more than a political hack and a really superficial intellectual, especially if you read the column this morning where he says that the big banks were not responsible for the meltdown of 2008. Now he's a Nobel laureate in economics. And if he doesn't understand the role of the big banks and the overturning of Glass-Steagall in 1999 by the Clinton administration, which allowed the commercial banks to also be investment banks and unleashed Wall Street upon the people. If he doesn't understand that and the processes of financialization and securitization and all of the things that allowed the mortgage crisis and the bubble over these mortgages to become a global financial crisis. If he doesn't understand the role of big banks and investment houses in that, he needs to give his Nobel Peace Prize in economics back to whoever gave it to him.
Yeah, you know.
So yeah, it's crunch time. Bill Clinton here in Philadelphia, you know, really acted like a madman and a desperate person when he was confronted by two young people who were asking him questions concerning his wife's statement about young black men being predators.
Yeah. Let's talk about that a little bit. Where was this in Philly? And you know, set up with context and then tell us what happened.
Yeah. Bill Clinton was speaking to a group of what would appear to be the more active political forces in a section of Philadelphia that is populated by the stable black working class, professionals, and the lower middle class among black people. And it's a section of the city that is the most politically active in terms of voting of any other part of the city, black or white, and is, you know, it's just this very important area. And, you know, he had to motivate them, and the Clinton campaign has to motivate them to a real high level if they intend to take Philadelphia in the April 26th primary. So he was up there doing organizing and mobilizing work. And it was a small crowd, relatively, maybe a couple of hundred people. And he was interrupted by two activists from the Real Justice Coalition, who are veterans, you know, over the last year and a half in civil disobedience and organizing against police brutality. So they went up there and they began to shout out questions. And Bill Clinton seemingly thought he had things under control. And so he was going to respond to them, I think, to show this audience of primarily black people that he could stand up to, I guess, what he thought were the Bernie Sanders people. And in so doing, he exposed the racist essence of the politics of Clintonism. That is, you know, the Democratic Leadership Council and the whole idea of triangulation that they hatched back in the 1990s. That is the idea that the Democratic Party had to win back the white Reagan Democrats. And to do that, you had to show that you were not, quote, kowtowing to black people. You know, the label that the Republicans had given the so-called Democratic liberals. So his attack, if you might remember, upon Sister Souljah back in 1992 was part of that. And then, of course, the crime bill and the welfare reform bills of 1994-95, which were a package and a kind of a political stance saying to the white Republican, the working class Republicans, and other people who were either racist or influenced by the racism of the Republican Party, that as president, he would not lean over backward to accommodate black people. But it was not just a political thing. We now see it is his worldview that Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton are steeped in Southern white racism, and they stick by, and he defended Hillary Singh calling black young people and especially black young men predators, which then demonizes them and sets them up for all of the imprisonment that we see, but also the targeting of them by the police for murder and brutality.
You know, the video of this whole exchange shows a very slow shift among this very influential group of voters and activists in Philly. They completely supported him at the beginning. They were supportive of him as he was engaging with the two protesters. And then as they asked him about both the predator statement that Hillary had made and about the impact of his own legislation on mass incarceration, in particular of young black men, his responses started turning the audience, and by the end they were hostile.
Yeah, it would seem that way. It seems that he lost it, and he lost the audience, because, you know, his defense of himself was really the was a kind of Nixonian thing, that a law and order kind of stand. You know, going back to Richard Nixon and, you know, the law and order campaigns of the 1960s and 70s, which claimed that black people were the source of crime and had to be brought under control, or really had to be brought down, and that the black movement itself was, in their rhetoric, not legitimate, because what we were doing is merely playing the race card and trying to advance unqualified black people into positions held by qualified white people. But But what Bill Clinton did, it took a page out of, or even wrote a new chapter in this law and order rhetoric. Now, this is very telling going forward, because it means that for the rest of the campaign, in order to win back Bernie's base among white working people, especially white working class men, Hillary is going to try to sell this law and order, this demonization of black people. And certainly going into the general election, if she is the nominee, there's no telling how far she and Clinton, Bill Clinton, will go with this type of racist demonization of the black community.
Yeah, I mean, he tries to make the case that what he did benefited vulnerable people in
Absolutely.
The black community the most, because that's where the most extreme danger existed from these predators,
right.
quote unquote. And in addition to that, what I thought was really dishonest was his attempt to say, when he sort of contextualized his statements by saying, well, look, first of all I did was sign federal legislation that only affects about 10% of the people who've been in jail too long. The rest was done at the states. But politically, what he did was open up space for exactly the kind of quote-unquote compromise that was made at the federal level at each of the state levels, like here in New York, where you had a Democratic mm-hmm. governor or a Democratic assembly, in any event, when Pataki was president, was governor, and they had the political space, because Clinton was selling it, to do exactly the same things in places like New York City, where we now still have stop and frisk, by the way.
Yes, yes. And in Philadelphia, where we still have stop and frisk, although the current mayor had run on a platform that he would do away with stop and frisk.
Mm.
But, yes, absolutely. Clinton set the political tone that allowed a bipartisanship at the state level between Democrats and Republicans to institute new crime policies and pass new crime, so-called anti-crime legislation, which criminalized the black community. And you know something, Don? It was very interesting observing Bill Clinton at this event, because on the one side, he feels very comfortable among certain black people. Now, obviously, the black misleadership class has misled him as well about the feelings and sentiments and sensibilities and sensitivities of African Americans. And he thinks that he's an honorary black person and therefore can talk to black people in any way he chooses. So he starts out with this idea that I was doing this for you all. Now, that sounds very paternalistic.
Yeah.
That goes back to Southern slavery, we have done all of this for you, and now you want to be free. And that's what Bill Clinton was saying to that audience. Look at all I've done for you. And now you're going to question my wife, and you're going to allow this white socialist Jew, and I would not rule that out, in Bill Clinton, to question my wife's commitment to protecting black people from crime and the criminals in their midst. So I think he showed himself what he truly is, but he also demonstrated the desperation within the Hillary Clinton campaign. And I think if you put his performance side by side with Paul Krugman's column in today's New York Times, we see a growing desperation within the Hillary Clinton camp. And we already knew that Bill Clinton was very upset with the way the campaign is being run. He thinks the younger technocrats are politically inexperienced and naive. And so he calls himself moving to the fore, and he's going to reshape the narrative and all of that type of thing. But what he did in Philadelphia the other night, I think that was Wednesday night, was a real disaster for the campaign. And I think it may have been the event that shifts the black vote here in Philadelphia increasingly away from Hillary Clinton and towards Bernie Sanders.
And, you know, this might be a good spot to mention that the Democratic convention, which may well end up being a brokered convention, is going to take place in, or an open convention in any event, is going to take place in Philadelphia. And you now have basically Bill Clinton preparing the soil among people who are activists and voters there. Do you think that that could have an impact on how things play out in and around the convention?
Oh, I think what Bill Clinton did is to just fire up young people, the Bernie Sanders people. Of course, you know, the day before Bill Clinton went crazy, there was a big rally of about 20,000 people for Bernie Sanders at Temple University. They're desperate. I think they see Hillary losing it. You know, I saw a interview with Michael Eric Dyson, and he was trying to position himself as the objective observer who just happens to be supporting Hillary Clinton because of her her being a policy wonk and an expert, and Bernie Sanders not being qualified. He took the same line, by the way, as Krugman, which means it's the line of the campaign. But he, too, took the position that we have to bring it all out now. This is, if we lose it in New York City and in New York State, we've lost the race. We, you know, we might come close to the numbers, but we've lost. Because if it's an open convention, Hillary loses, I think. Or if it's an open convention, it would seem that there would be no end to it, no matter how they tried to resolve it at the convention. What would come out of that would continue after the convention and would dog, if Hillary gets it and maybe illegally or unjustly gets it, but whatever goes down, she will be dogged throughout the rest of this election cycle. Their idea that it'll be such an easy victory over the supposed Trump campaign can't be assumed. So I'm looking at more and more turbulence within the politics of this nation at this time, which is but a manifestation, and I'm sorry for talking so long, a manifestation of the economic turbulence of neoliberal capitalism itself.
Yeah, I'm glad you went there, as a matter of fact. I'm going to diverge for a second just to go up to New York and show a similar dynamic there. On the one hand, Trump was out in Long Island Wednesday night, I think, and he had thousands and thousands of people there in Bethpage. And Ted Cruz even made headlines. He couldn't get 100 people together.
Right. And it seems like some young Latino activists and rappers attacked him. I think I understand that one of the young brothers was associated with Rebel Diaz. And they shut Trump down, I mean, pardon me, Cruz down in the Bronx. And they told him that the Bronx is not a place for his politics. So, yes, this is a generalized movement of protest and is becoming a generalized uprising of the working people and the unemployed and even parts of the lumpen proletariat. And this is across the racial divide. And I mean, this is something the likes of which we have not seen perhaps since the 1850s. The crumbling of the political structures and mechanisms of power, and the questioning of the elites and of Wall Street and of the military. This is beyond anything that anyone could have predicted only a year ago, or that few of us fully understand in a strategic and ideological, political sense.
You know, going exactly there now with everything that's been said, I remember back in the 1990s when a group of supporters of Mumia Abu-Jamal in Philadelphia went to the National Convention of the NAACP asking for a resolution, A, condemning the death penalty, and B, calling for a new trial for Mumia Abu-Jamal. I remember that the corporate-run NAACP rejected that, and so people went out into the streets of Philadelphia and forced exactly that out of the NAACP. This presidential election has that movement underneath it and the conditions that we've been describing being laid out in Philadelphia. Do you see the possibility of the street influencing the convention's outcome?
I see the street influencing not only the outcome of the convention, but the primary in Pennsylvania. You know, that's why the polls don't mean anything. You know, the consensus of most of the polls here in Pennsylvania has Hillary up on average by double digits, something like 20%. But it doesn't mean anything, because now that the attention of the masses is focused upon this and the seriousness of it and so on and the passion of it, I think the street will decide what happens on election day, on April 26th here. Now, the other thing, and I'm glad you mentioned Philadelphia, going back to the 90s, when the head of the local chapter of the NAACP went to the Pittsburgh convention and insisted that they not call for a new trial for Mumia Abu-Jamal. And we demonstrated against him, and we attacked him. And as you say, we took to the streets. And the NAACP took a position against the death penalty, have not yet taken a position for a new trial for Mumia. But here is what is so important. Next week, there's going to be a student walkout, which is calling on the Temple University Board of Trustees to not build a football stadium in the middle of Black North Philadelphia. But we'll raise many, many other questions, including all of the questions that are part of Bernie Sanders' campaign, including debt relief for student debt and free college education in state universities. So I think we're in a period the likes of which we have not seen in 50 years. This will, I'm going to go out on a limb and make a prediction. I think at this point, the only way we could see this in political terms is that Bernie Sanders is the favorite going forward in the rest of the primaries. He is the favorite. And I think New York, what happens there, and I call upon my New York people, don't hesitate. You have to go after Hillary. She has to be stopped there. If you guys do it there, I think we'll carry our weight in Pennsylvania. And at that point, I think we have broken the Hillary Clinton and the Bill Clinton campaign psychologically and politically.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.